Welcome to Late Night Riders. On this episode, we were honored to have Lady Long Rider Bernice Endy. Bernice has ridden over 30,000 miles.
From the moment Bernice walked in, she was a spirit of joy and genuineness. You can find her book on her website, endyofthetrail.com, endyofthetrail.com. They also have an ebook available, as well as Amazon.
On this episode, we talked to her about trail magic, traveling, why she rides, what made her want to do long riding. It's a really interesting episode, and she has a lot of knowledge to share. So enjoy. Welcome to Late Night Riders. I'm Gretchen, and I'm joined by my grandma, Debbie, Stephanie, and Bernice Endy. If you didn't know, Bernice Endy is the Lady Long Rider. Bernice, how many miles have you ridden?
A little over 30,000.
Which is just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Even I think sometimes it's a bit much.
At what point did you feel like you were officially a long rider?
Oh, that's a good question, because it was really a clearly defined moment. Mm. And I thought about this a long time ago, and it's something that I've been in a continuous controversial topic with the Long Riders Guild, because 1,000 miles is defined as a long ride. And at the end of a long ride, people say, I'm now a long rider. And I remember thinking at the end of that I was no long rider. That I knew nothing at the end of 1,000 miles. And then I thought, at the end of 10,000 miles, I'm going to feel like a long rider. I remember thinking very clearly, yeah, when I reach 10,000 miles, yeah, I'll know what I'm doing then. And I still didn't know what I was doing.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I'd reached the East Coast on the 8,000-mile ride, and I had been out then little over 25,000 miles. And I said to myself, okay, now I'll call myself a long rider. I know what I'm doing. I'm seasoned. It was the first time that I'd ever felt like I was seasoned in anything. Seasoned.
Even ballet.
Not like this.
Did you feel confident at that point when you, like the very first day, did you feel confident in that ride, the 8,000-mile ride, that you knew what you were doing, you knew where you were going to go, and it wasn't...
I knew when I started the 8,000-mile ride, I knew where I was going to go. And I there was confidence, but I still didn't have that sense of, you know, I now can call myself a long rider. That didn't come until halfway through the long ride, that 8,000-mile ride. I mean, that was my 13th year of consecutively riding that I finally had that sense of accomplishment.
Well, can we go back to day one, the very first day that you got on that horse? A lot of people want to know, what made you decide to do this? What made you go for it? What made you not turn around?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it was no simple matter. It wasn't like I wanted to go and do a long ride. It was never, ever in my mind that I wanted to do a long ride.
Right.
As I've heard... Hundreds of times, people stand beside me in tears many times and say, I heard it today. Joy said today that she wants to do a long ride.
Yeah.
I never thought that. I didn't even know what a long ride was. So when this idea did come to me, it was more of something like a vision that really just, you know, grabbed me by the throat and was just not going to leave me, and it screamed at me and refused to leave, and I tried to talk myself out of it. You know, by this time I considered myself a fairly accomplished horsewoman. I'd ridden all my life. I rode in my mother's belly. I came out riding, right? I've ridden and showed and did lessons and da-da-da-da, you know, but, you know, I got blown out of the saddle with long riding. I just completely wiped off the map as far as, you know, knowing what I was doing. But once that idea settled in. I really honestly think it was ego that would not let me go back.
Yeah.
Turn around and, you know, thinking that, you know, people would laugh at me or people would say, you know, we told you so. We knew you couldn't do it. I really think it was that that kept me going, because it was nothing short of a nightmare.
Yeah. You had said earlier that your horse wanted to turn back the whole time.
I wanted to turn back the whole time.
Even that first night.
Even that first night. Worst of all.
Yeah.
I know.
It makes me, one of the questions that I always consider is how you choose your mounts. You know, why that horse? Like, and I could feel the tension, the way you talk about the tension in that horse, and it comes through you, and that's the horse that you're on, and then you're now committed to this,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. an incredible amount of time, and this is mm-hmm. these are the conditions that you're starting mm-hmm. off in,
right.
And the amount of time it took for that particular horse to settle down,
right?
And yet, I feel like your second choice was along the same lines.
Absolutely, even worse.
Yeah, so
it was worse.
Can you talk about that?
Well, it wasn't like I chose. I mean, I didn't have a lot of choice.
Okay.
I mean, it was like
okay.
That, you know, it was like, okay, pride. I started out with two young Tennessee walking horses off this McCurry Ranch.
Yes.
And they obviously, it was quite obvious that I did not have the skill to take two horses out. Mm. It was quite obvious that I could not do this. And it was quite obvious these two young three-year-olds, just barely four-year-olds, were not big enough. And so we decided...
Big enough in their stature?
Stature, yeah, size.
Why?
They weren't big enough. They weren't fully developed. These were too young. They were too young.
Okay.
Their minds, their bodies were too young. Hmm. And so Mac, the owner of the ranch, an older man, said, well, what do you want to take, you know? You want to take Mariah? You want to take Pride? And I'm, well, you know, I'd worked with Pride the most. He was, you know, he was a big, hot, flashing Tennessee walking horse that had come back from the sales. He'd been sold twice and brought back. Wow. And this horse had been literally destroyed by a trainer, a show trainer. Mm. And I had gotten him after he'd been returned. I was really the only person that he trusted. And I'd had him for, you know, I'd worked with that horse for 2 years. But he was a herd horse, and he belonged there. And, you know, for him to ask any horse to go out alone is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not. There's not a lot of horses that want to go out and be by themselves at night.
Mm.
So, you know, I thought I knew him. I thought I was prepared. I thought I had everything ready. I was all nicely dressed. I had the right clothes on.
Had your maps in order.
I had my maps in order, right? I had everything ready. I'd practiced everything in my mind. I'd gone over everything. You know, are you supposed to practice in your mind? What's happened?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
I practice in my mind. I did everything, you know, ran across railroad tracks and down busy roads. And, you know, I just tried to do everything, cover everything. I thought I had everything covered. And it just, like... slam dunk.
Like the carpet ripped out.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. I cried and cried. Every night I cried. And how am I going to do this? How can I do this?
Yeah.
And I was so wet and so well. It was cold. There was snow. And it was like, oh my. And my feet, I got off I cut off the horse. I couldn't even stand up. My back hurt so bad. My shins were so sore. I thought I was in condition. I was a ballet teacher, you know. I was like, I knew I was in good shape. And it was so hard. It was so hard. Those first few years were so hard.
You probably couldn't sleep, though, really.
I didn't. I mean, there was no sleep. I know. That's what I think about motherhood. It's like, there's no sleep.
Yeah. And then
there's no sleep.
Trying to ride the next day.
And I had no tent. I slept outside for the first 3 years.
How did you do that, honestly? I mean,
I know.
In all kinds of weather.
All
what
kinds
did you
of
do
weather.
When it rained and snowed?
I had a tarp over my head.
Wow. And I kept know. One eye on the horse, I'm sure.
Always.
And yeah.
Always. Close by.
Yeah.
So you never slept for the most
not
part.
Not 8 hours. No,
yeah.
Not there was, and there never is. There, you just have
right.
to realize that there's no 8 hour sleeps it's just, and I like that. I like it now. I mean, because the day night really just, it's a continuous circle. You know how we're so defined, like, okay, I'll have 8 hours of sleep, and I'm going to 8 hours at my job, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to exercise for an hour, and I'm going to do this for an hour. You know, it's like nothing is defined like that. It is just, you know, I'll catch my sleep maybe during the day, and I'll be up most of the night. I'll take care of this when I can. Mm-hmm. It's just a continuous, nice, easy flow. Of course, you know, you're moving very slowly, but it's day and night is not defined as we define it in normal conditions.
And Mother Nature has much to say about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a part in the book where you talk about, you know, people view it as a tremendous amount of freedom to live the life that you live.
Right, right.
But actually,
it's quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite.
I'm so dependent on people.
Uh-huh. And weather.
And weather.
Mother Nature runs the show.
Absolutely. She runs the show. Absolutely. Mother Nature runs the show. Right, right. And turning yourself over to that, allowing that, you know, not fighting that, or fighting, you know, that, you know, the humility it takes to step down off your high horse and ask for help. You know, that was
a hurdle for you?
It is. It still is. Yeah. I mean, it still is, you know, like when I'm riding into town and I come in and I'm tired and I'm dirty and, you know, and I look kind of rugged and people, you know, like, why are you doing this? Why do you want to do this? And I have to find somewhere. I have to find somewhere to answer that.
You know? You've done it so many times now.
I know.
I can imagine with every time it's a new, it's fresh again.
It's so much easier though.
Yeah.
It's so much easier.
Now, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't have the raging anxiety or, you know, just that, I'm okay.
Right.
I'm okay with not knowing. I'm okay with the mystery. I'm okay with the uncertainty And if you can't embrace that, you won't do it. You won't do it. It's too hard. There's nothing fun about it. It's not fun. It's so much more than fun. It's my life. It's what I do for a living. It's my life. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime dream. It's my life.
Mm-hmm. To not change the subject, but in the beginning of the book, you make so many references and thank yous to the Native American tribes, and I understand, you know, there's, you know, political implications to discuss, you know, those, that type of.
Absolutely.
But but you don't talk about it a lot in the book.
No, I don't.
And
it'll come in the next book.
It will?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I can't wait.
So much I didn't.
And I gleaned that to keep it, you know, not ruffle feathers.
Exactly. And the publisher was really clear about that.
Uh-huh.
They did not want me to put things in there
that would ruffle feathers.
That would ruffle feathers. They said, this is not the book to do this. This is your first book. You don't do that now.
Okay.
You do that later.
So we can see a little of that.
But all my experiences with the Native tribes were just such wonderful experiences.
Yeah.
And I saw such wonderful, good things and on all of them, in all of the tribes that I've been at many of them. And crossing tribal lands is part of what I do. And asking for permission to cross tribal lands. And I go to the tribal elders and speak before them and ask for permission and give my thanks and respects and give them a gift. And I've stayed with many families, at many of the tribes. And
I can't wait to hear about
that. And they're very interesting. Yeah.
You write.
I do.
You have all those experiences from they're like all, day to
right.
day or whatever.
And I
so
do.
You can
I got tons of, I've got, I don't know, stacks and stacks of journals. Yeah.
Wow.
Everything was documented.
That's
I did.
Wonderful.
I do document my rides.
Such a writer.
One question that I had was, when you ride into town and you need to go to the store or do whatever, run some errands, where do you put your horses?
Well, I try to go around the back, and like a dumpster would work, or telephone pole would work. Sometimes by the time I've gotten to the store, there's people that have accumulated, and someone will hold the horses.
Okay.
Well, that will work. You know, I try to get them off the street where it's busy, of course. there are times on those first few years I would go to the front door because I wasn't going to let go of that horse.
Oh, right. Wow.
And I would reach in, I'd call it, could I get some food? Could I buy some food? And you know, by those measures of, you know, I needed a can of tuna fish. I needed a pack of tortillas and some cream cheese and a cucumber. Mm. You know, you're talking if I had $3, I had $3 to buy food with or something, yeah.
And those deer trail angels that you those came
trail
across
angels. Oh
that
my
were
gosh.
Kind and helped in between as well. So
how could we live without them? I mean, they're everywhere. They are everywhere. They're in our lives all the time.
Yeah,
it's just I think it's a bit more raw for me, and it's a bit more apparent for me. You know, that somebody just simply when they're driving by that they stop, that they're like they see this and they go, what? And they stop. I mean, that to me is like just to stop and say hello. That's a trail angel to me. You know, not only the fact that they probably have potato chips or candy or cookies or something in that car, and at that time I ate anything. You know, it was like, you know, I mean, that was like.
Okay. Probably needed it.
Oh, I ate anything. Oh, I took
it.
Anything.
You had
they
to
were
going to
give it to the horses.
Oh, wow.
They were
going
to give it
You're
to
like,
the horses, right? And I, of course, I took it and kept it and ate it myself. But yeah, the trail angels. I know it. I was like, I couldn't have possibly done these rides without them. I mean, but, you know, again, I just, you know, I think that we don't recognize them because our lives are so, you know, busy and full, and all the things that people do for us. They're really little angels that are helping us, and it's just that I see them so many times. I mean, there's just been so many of them where I was just at the end, you know, like...
Halfway in.
Right.
You're 1,000 miles.
Right, hitting the wall there.
Yeah.
You know, and Michelle pulls up in a Mustang car and says, invites me in. And those people... literally put me back in the saddle. I was going to quit. That was it. It was 1,000 miles. I was going to go any further, and they made it happen.
Helped you.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about like the things that are difficult during those journeys, though. What maybe even the small things that we don't think about gave you joy?
Oh my gosh! You know, there is nothing in the world like being in the middle of a desert with a fire going and your horse is standing next to you, and it's complete blackness.
Wow!
You know, you've got stars out, silence, and crackling fire.
Wow!
It's just such, you know, embraced by that kind of solitude. That kind of solitude and silence, and just. So comfortable there, you know, not, and I think so many times I think, how is it that I can even be out here and not be afraid? I have simply none. It's just simply not there. I don't even, it just doesn't even register as far as fear, like that I would be afraid out there, knowing that, you know, there is nobody around for hundreds of miles. You know, there's anything can happen, you know, rattlesnakes or anything, you know, people coming out or whatever, you know, I mean, or being up in the woods, and I've just, you know, like, you know, ridden days and days and days, and I've just found this little place. It's like, you know, it's calling and saying, come, stay here. Stay here for a few days. Come on. And there's a creek and there's nice grass and there's a nice fire pit. And there you are. You know, you've got food out there because you can forage for your food. And it's like, and then you just settle in. And it's just this wonderful, nice little harmonic days that happen. You know, it's slow and, you know, the routine is very simple and the food is very simple. And it's just... thank you. Thank you.
Do you have conversations with your horses the whole time, or?
Not the whole time, but I do talk to them. I sing to them. I sing.
Do they talk back?
Always. We do whinny back and forth. I do. We whinny all the time. And Spirit, I've never had a horse whinny like she does to me. She talks to me all of the time. She is always talking to me. She is always whinnying to me. I mean, it's like I have never had a horse like this. But all night long, like I'll call out and I'll go, Spirit. And if there's nothing back, everything's okay. But if there's a knicker back, something's wrong. Hmm. They need something. If anything's wrong out there, if there's a rope wrong or if there's, you know, one horse has gone too far or something, you know, anything. Hmm. There's not enough grass or they need water or something, they will knicker. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. And that has come from being with them and 24/7. And I really felt strongly about that, about sleeping with them, that I spent the nights that I did not go in and I did not leave them. I felt very strongly about that. And when I first started, I didn't know about that. I mean, I didn't know anything when I first started. I really didn't. But as I, Honor was the one, that, and she was really a lesson in devotion, was the Gray Thoroughbred, that second horse I took out. Having her need to have me there all of the time. She had to have me there. She was just so beside herself with loss and, you know, not trusting anything.
The tar paper shack with the $1 million view.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I know.
That feeling of that you get to be inside.
It was so wonderful. And, right? I love that. I just love, you know, early on, and it happened even on the first ride, I realized that I had, and I write about that in the book, I have the opportunity to go back and live as I did as a child, to remember what it felt like as a child, to be on my horses riding before the years of you should be like this, you should do that, you shouldn't do that, and maybe, you know, you're not doing enough. And you know how we're shaped and defined by these cultural ways of how we're supposed to be. And here I am, getting to be on my horse and ride like this, and it's like that tar paper shirt. It's like playing house. It's like my tent. It's like playing
so
house.
Yeah,
it's so just so sweet. Much fun to me. I just have my horse trailer. It's so much fun to me to make these things so pretty and functional. And it's like I'm just like I love like my packs and my padding. It's like I just have so much fun making it a little better and tweaking it, and it's going to be like this and it's going to be nicer and you know, I just love to do that. I love
to
it.
Hear
you know,
there's
and
joy in
I'm,
it. There's
I'm,
joy in it.
There's just so much joy in that simplicity of that, but it's just like I just find this like just this giddiness of like
Aww,
it's just so much fun.
It is.
I know. I like my tent cozy. You know, the tent cozy that goes over my tent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's warm in here, and it's so pretty. Look at that. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. But the tar paper shack was an important step because it was this discovery of home, how to create home wherever I was,
away from home. Yeah,
right? Away from that thing we call home. Right. I no longer have. I have no. There's no home.
But you still had a cabin in Montana.
I do, but I don't think of it as home.
It's not.
No, not at all. Okay. Home is that trailer right now.
Gotcha.
My horses. My familiar. Yeah.
So with your horses, being that, you know, you spend this time, and we talk to a lot of people that talk about their relationship with their horses and things, spending all this time and being with them, is there anything that you feel that might be, well, you don't have everything we've heard, but that might be different that you've learned or that you feel with your horses? Do you feel like you don't even have to talk to them? It just, the rhythm is just, what do you find?
Right,
what do you find with them that maybe people don't talk about too much? Or is it just, it's just kind of the...
You know, you take away your corrals, your fencing, you take all that away, your houses, and you live with them, and the dynamics
change.
Are something I could never have imagined. I could just never have imagined. You know, like I see all these, like all the workshops and the clinics and, you know, shaping your horses, you're going to do this and, you know, make them go over these trails and things like that. And, you know, all the arena work. And I think, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice. But, you know, will they do this for you? Mm-hmm. You know, will they do that for you? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just this level of, I don't know. I can't even explain it. I don't know. I have never, I couldn't, I don't think you'll ever know unless you take that step mm-hmm. away from all the division that we create, you yeah. know, with our walls and
yeah.
to live with them. I live with them.
Yeah.
You know, they sleep next to me. They yeah. lay down next to me in my tent. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear them eating all night long. I hear their bells all night long, even now. And, you know, just, you know, it's like having your children with you all the time. Mm-hmm. They are. They are very much like that. And yet, what they provide for me, I mean, here they are carrying their burden of my, all this stuff that I have, and, you know, asking them to do that, and asking them to, and they're leading me. I mean, that horse is in front. I'm asking her to bravely carry me through this chaos. You know, darn it. Mm-hmm. I just have, you know, just this deep appreciation for them. I just love them so deeply. I just say thank you to them all the time. Aww. I do everything I possibly can to make them comfortable. Aww. I mean, they just, you know, I mean, they walk up to me. I mean, they walk up to me. They just plow their head into my chest. And there they are. There they are. And, you know, it's constant hands-on. It's yeah. constant rapport. You know, and it's just, you know, you're just always touching them and around them and under them and on them. And, oh, gosh.
It's wonderful.
It's
just wonderful.
A very unique An intimate
hard
relationship.
To explain, almost. I'm sure hard to not explain, but the words, because yeah. it's the relationship.
I know, because how would you know it? How yeah. would you know it? Mm-hmm. How could mm-hmm. you ever know it?
Mm-hmm. Is this the longest you've been apart?
The France ride.
Okay, was that 3 months?
Six weeks.
6 weeks. Okay, and this is probably the second longest.
Yeah, yeah, but see, I'm going to go see them tomorrow night.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'll see them tomorrow night and Sunday night, and then I come back and I'll see them Thursday night, and then I'm gone for 3 weeks.
Oh. Will you stable them again in New York, or do you have any
writing
time?
No, they will stay here.
Oh, the whole time you'll be on
the
East Coast?
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
You good friends there you have there in Michigan?
Well, no, I've never met these people, but I'm confident that they will be good. Yeah,
that's
absolutely
good.
They'll be fine up there with them.
Mm-hmm. Aww,
so yeah. What do you do between your rides?
Get ready for the next ride. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been like that. That's all I've done for the past 15 years. There was no in-between rides.
So do you plan at that time? You're thinking, as you're riding, I'm sure, what you'll do next, to get ready for that next ride. Is it just perhaps like I need something new, like a, not that
making
you need
things,
new
right,
blanket
right,
or
getting
things for
ready.
Your horses mm-hmm. that you need to do, mm-hmm. the preparation.
Right, preparation
again.
To go out back right. again, defining the route, and making contacts. You know, there's more things, you know, with, you know, books and all this other stuff, you know, the website and all that kind of thing. So there's more things like that, emails and people that stay in touch with me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's more of that, but, right. You know, getting the gear together, horses in shape. I mean, I ride every day. You know, I don't not ride. Even today, I mean, when I'm traveling, I stop and I ride the horses twice a day. I hop on. I don't put saddles on. I only ride with saddles when I'm traveling. I ride bareback the rest of the time always.
Wow.
Just hop on and exercise them twice a day.
Yeah.
Just for a lot of it's for my own sake too. You know, they need to be in shape. They need to exercise too. But I need to maintain this. I call it anticipatory skills. It's the ability to anticipate them, and that comes from using them, riding them. You know, you've got to have hand skills and rope skills that, you know, you've got to be good with your hands and the ropes to be managing two horses.
And you are an athlete in your own.
I do,
you know,
I do.
And you need
I do.
To keep that, too.
I do,
you know,
yeah.
And that's a lot,
keep
too.
Keep myself in
yes,
shape.
Yes, you do.
Or it will go really fast. As we know, mm-hmm. don't
yes,
we, Debbie?
We do. Yes, we do. We need to talk about that more, don't we? Yes.
Speaking of gear, you know, getting your gear ready and things like that. So how did it come to be that you connected with the, I don't know if you call them sponsors. Or, mm-hmm. you know, like, how did Tucker come around
right.
and your hat and, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
like on
right.
your pads and
right.
the things that
right.
you use.
Right. That started on the second year. Outfitter Supply is up near where I live. And I went into Russ Barnett, who's the owner, and asked if he would give me packs for my next ride. I was going to go on a 5,000-mile ride. And he'd had some real bad things happen to him. He'd sponsored some riders down in New Mexico, and they did not do him good. Mm-hmm. And he was hesitant. You know, I'd done my 2,000-mile ride that I had behind me, but, you know, I really didn't know anything. But then he sold Tucker Saddles, and he knew Steve Tucker. And he said, and I brought my saddle in to show him. It was a 45-pound roping saddle that I was using my first ride.
Wow.
I was going to use that on the second ride. It's all I had.
Yeah.
I know. It's like,
yeah.
right. It's
yeah.
like,
oh,
right.
my God.
Roping saddle. Wow, yeah.
I mean, think of that. For that first ride, that horse had well over 250 pounds on him.
Yeah.
Easily. So anyways, Russ talked Steve into providing a saddle. And that was the beginning. And those on the second ride, then I had a Tucker saddle and Outfitter Supply, and I looked pretty good. I did. And then later on, you know, then it came, you know. Now I've got Cashel and Ariat's provided boots and somebody hats and Cashel, I said. And
so you've approached them mostly for your
yeah
for those
yeah,
good for
right,
you
right
good for you
asked and now they usually say yes and. So I
good
don't,
for you.
You know, it gives me credibility too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it gives makes me look a little bit more credible for talks. People are more likely, more willing to let me in for a talk or invite me in for a talk. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your signature hat, I just
the
love
signature
it.
Hat.
So
right.
what does it? What can you tell me? What so much you like about it for your rides? I know it's a beautiful hat, but it works so well for you. Can you tell me why you like it so well?
Well, it's a somebody hat, and it's a sombrero. So it's an 8-inch rim, so it's a pretty big hat.
Yes,
and
it
it's
is.
A classic Gus. Mm-hmm. It's a style that was from the 1800s.
Really?
And it's a palm leaf. And Jimmy Breyer owns the company, and he does he works with the Guatemalans, and and does a fair trade and works with them, and
nice.
So it's a good thing. Yeah.
Do you like it for its weight and that it
yes.
does? Do you feel like
right.
it does
no.
take
right.
care of you,
exactly.
keep you warm, but it's also
right.
not heavy? But then it the sun.
Sun,
is,
of course, the sun
yes.
is so important, but it keeps the sun off my shoulders.
Yeah.
And it keeps the rain off my shoulders.
Yeah.
The only thing it's hard is when it's windy
because it is a big brim.
I've got a stampede braid.
I saw
right?
that.
The stampede, and there are times though, when I've taken a scarf and tied it on with a scarf because I've had to have that shade. But there are times when it's just impossible. That's the wind is the number one
it is.
You know, mm-hmm. force that you are encountering mm-hmm. out there, not rain or snow or sleet or anything. It's the wind.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Speaking of forces, okay, the stallion.
Oh, man.
My heart was just pounding.
I think all of our hearts were pounding.
8,000 questions about like how did that? The
Kristen
thing I keep
too. Kristen's shaking.
You just
her
don't
head.
Think that horses
no.
would be that aggressive.
Well, what's amazing?
I do, but I don't know how you handled it. Like, I mean, you just can't imagine what was going through your head.
What's amazing?
And I was so dumb about it. I didn't know. I had no idea what I was doing.
I would think like of the places that you've gone and been and done. Right, so. You know, snakes and bears and coyote and
right,
wolf
right,
and,
right.
you know.
That all came later.
Okay. But,
but
the most dangerous
stallion.
Thing
was the range stallion.
Was
yeah.
a horse.
Yeah.
Which the
but
most
it was a range
thing.
Stallion. You got to remember, it was a range stallion.
What's the difference?
A range stallion is different from a ranch stallion because there are ranch stallions out there running around too. But the ranch stallions are handled.
Okay.
They know people.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have some respect, and they, you know, they know people. They don't have the aggressiveness. They couldn't possibly. They wouldn't. A rancher would not have an aggressive stallion like that around.
Yeah.
But this is a range stallion. It's wild. It's never been captive.
Yeah.
And it is fierce, and it is deadly, and it is willing to kill me to take that beautiful gray thoroughbred of mine. It wanted my mare. And of course she was in heat, and of course she was willing to go. It's just she was just
goodness.
She was in heat. She was perpetually in heat. That mare was perpetually in heat.
Wow.
And she was just so docile, and it was a good thing. She was so docile about it all. You know, she was just like waiting for her stallion. And he was just raging. Wow.
Yeah, your mind.
I know it. I know it. But you know, but it's like you just react. I mean, it's like, I know, I realize this now. I mean, it's like, it's not fear. It's not fear. You're not in a state of fear. Mm-hmm. You're in a state of action. Mm-hmm. You're moving, you know, and I had this it's a screw in, like you screw in for dogs, you know, mm-hmm. steak, you know, mm-hmm. like that. I had mm-hmm. that for, and I was mm-hmm. screaming and yelling at him, get away. And he'd run off, and he was constantly circling with his few herds. He had, you know, maybe half a dozen out there, circling and circling. He'd come raging in down low sometimes, and I'm rearing on his hind legs. Oh. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And but the savior, the champion, Claire, she was the champion of that whole scene.
Really?
It was Claire. I wouldn't have gotten out of there.
She really,
I would never in a million years could have found my way out of there. It was pitch black.
Yeah.
I had no idea what direction to even go.
And
I had no idea how to get back out of that section of land. And these are huge, thousands of acres of sections.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the fence line was quite a ways away. I had to find that gate that I came into.
Mm-mm.
And Claire knew. I just said, Claire, where do we go? And she took off and didn't go far. And my headlamp kept an eye on her, and we followed her, and she just weaved us through this.
Goodness sakes.
Was he still coming at you?
And
he
was still following the whole time. Yeah, he followed, and even, you know, stood there by the gate, you know, screaming and yelling, and just screaming. You know, just screaming at us.
Really?
And followed us. And followed us down that fence line until he, you know, finally turned around and head back with his herd.
The drive is real.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like their drive, you know, the drive in them and that,
exactly.
That survival instinct. Yeah. And that's all still very clear with them.
You know, mounting my mare, trying to take my saddle off with its teeth.
It's insane,
right? And I had my, you know, the gear. I just threw it on.
Yeah.
I couldn't possibly put. I had anything. Everything was just thrown on there and just tied, roped around, and tied on as best as I could.
Oh,
I mean, nothing was on properly. Nothing. Saddle pad. Nothing. Nothing was on.
Yeah.
It was blowing like madness.
Oh,
you try to put a saddle pad on with the wind.
Oh my!
It was like,
oh my!
I know.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's absolutely crazy.
Yep. Well, I'm speechless now.
I know, right?
Okay.
I can't imagine.
Not much
Would
else
you
we
like
can
to
say.
Read the portion of the book?
Sure, I can. This is just
an excerpt?
Yeah,
from
an excerpt.
Lady Long Rider.
Unless you'd like to do the honors.
No.
And you can purchase this from your website, correct?
Yes. Amazon website, Far Country Press.
Endoftrails.com.
Endy of the trail.
This is an excerpt. This is into about halfway into your first 1,000-mile ride when you were having
hit the wall,
and you were with the Irwins.
I'm with the Irwins.
You're with the Irwins. You write, "The first step to moving through a wall is gaining perspective. This is a place where you will either confront or transform your demons." Or, from there on in, it will be nothing but a variation of the same old themes. Passing through the gate requires a willingness to take a deeper look at what's keeping you from moving forward. It's about breaking the grip of your perspective, beliefs, and opinions about yourself and others. It's about changing the dialogue in your head, and it's a whole lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
I would think that you have come to this road and these thoughts many times along the way. I would think that, you know, like you were saying, you didn't really feel like a long rider till you hit the East Coast, right?
Right.
I would imagine that you've come to that crossroad and had to pass through those
again and again,
again and again and again. And what courage that must have take of you.
You know, the hardest thing was I was afraid people would laugh at me.
Really?
From the very get-go. You know, I was raised in a conservative farm background. You know, I was 50 years old. I was bald, had alopecia. You know, so that made me a little bit more, even more, like, they're going to just think I'm, like, a cancer patient, like, mm-hmm. you know. And it just was so hard to ask for help. It was so hard to, you know, just to move freely out there. I just, it was the hardest part, mm-hmm. overcoming the image of myself, self-image, mm-hmm. you know, rewriting that in my head, you know, finding out what I was really made out of. And I really think it takes, you got to make that journey alone. I know, as hard as it is, it is a journey one must make alone in self-discovery. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you?
Well, I've got another month on the book tour, mm-hmm. and that will wrap up at the end of May. Then I go back to Montana. There's a documentary coming out at the end of, or sometime this year, maybe this year.
It's exciting.
Yes. I can't wait.
Yes. We'll see how that goes. We Productions out of Santa Fe, I've contracted with them. Nice. They approached me. And I think they'll do a good job. I think they were really more interested in the essence of what I'm doing, not so much of, you know, my routes or where I go to the bathroom or what I eat, but yeah. more, uh-huh. you know, more yeah. of what's going right. on, what right. happens when I am out there. Right. And I do hope that I'm not done. You know, I hope I'll get some rides in this year. I'll get some, you know, even if it's maybe only 400 or 500 miles, but I'll get something out to this year. And then next year is 2020, and that's the 100th anniversary of women's rights to vote. And there will be celebrations across the United States. And, of course, we have an election year. Yeah. So it's a very important year for me to be out riding. And I will right. be out riding because there were a number of suffragettes who rode. And I do have a long line of suffragettes that I come from. So I will be out with signs on my horses. Women vote.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will you be
and I'll
out
be out
west?
Here. No, I will be out
we'll
east.
Hope you
absolutely.
Come back here.
Yeah. I'll be out east.
We
yeah.
need to see you
yeah,
again.
No,
fantastic.
I will haul the horses over east here. Uh-huh. But and I had hoped to do a ride when I was done with the book tour, but those mares aren't ready to be out here out east. They're not. Yeah. Not that little young one. She's got I'll do some ride. She's got more time to build in before she's ready for something like this out here. Mm-hmm. So, but I'll be out next year. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's excellent. Amazing.
So excited.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be.
Yeah.
That should be very exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm very excited.
All right. Well, we'll be taking a short break, and when we get back, we'll enter our next segment, Canter Banter.
Do you love horses and live the equestrian lifestyle? Be sure to check out our brand new blog at www.yourhorsefarm.com. We publish 3 posts per week and feature a free printable equine checklist every month. Yourhorsefarm.com is a great equine online resource, so be sure to share with all the horse lovers in your life. And remember, laugh much and ride often. Our next segment, Canter Banter, is brought to you by Ram Horse Fencing and Stalls, the one-stop shop for your horse farm. Ram is family-owned and operated and has been in business for over 30 years. We welcome you to call in and speak with an expert about your next project today at 866-653-8984. Again, that's 866-653-8984.
And we're back. On this episode of Canter Banter, we will be talking about trail magic. Bernice, you've come across several things on the trail that were just beautiful. I know in your book you wrote about your Hershey bar that you stumbled upon.
Stepped upon.
Right, right, I know.
And it was magic.
It was. I know. It was like, oh my gosh.
I know. You know, I'd just come down off of the Continental Divide in Colorado, and I was so hungry. And there's a Hershey bar. A whole Hershey bar on the pavement. I didn't know it yet, but it was melted, you know, but it was still in shape, and my dog grabbed it and was trying to get it, and I'm trying to grab it from her.
No, it's mine.
No, it's mine. It's mine. You can't eat chocolate. It's not for dogs. It's mine. my horse had stepped on it by this time, and it was like, oh, geez. So anyway, so I licked it all up. I just yeah, but trail magic. Yeah, and trail magic, I think that's a really interesting thing, because I don't think it happens until we clear our mind of all these preconceived notions of what it should, what should happen. You know, we're always hanging on to, you know, we think we want to define what's around the corner. We think we're going to make it happen. I do it all the time. You know, but it, to when you stop that and you just let the world come to you, instead of trying to like shape it and make it like this, and it's going to happen like this, and they're going to be like that, and it'll happen like this, and you know how we do it. We all do this, right?
Yeah.
Right. But when you clear that out and you stop that, and it just sort of like, then it all happens with a surprise. It all happens with, oh yeah, because we're not keeping out the possibilities. Now it's just now anything can happen.
That's right.
And it does. Anything happens. And of course, I think trail magic happens only if you have, you have to believe. You have to believe. You really do. You have to believe that you're going down the right path. You have to believe that. You have to feel that. You have to know that. And in that, you will be provided for. It will just happen. I mean, it's like trail magic. It's magical.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere I've ever needed it, it was there. Even to think like, oh, I didn't have any food or I didn't have any water that night, but I had a place that was safe and I had a tree I could lean against, and there I was. I was safe and I was warm and I was dry. Okay, that's all I needed. And I got through that night. That was trail magic to me. Or, you know, that, you know, like Michelle pulling up and providing a place for me, or all the places, all the things, or just simply being lost and then found, you know, that kind of thing. It's and we all have trail magic. We don't see it. We just don't see it. We're so busy. We don't see it all the time. But it's happening all the time. It happens all the time. It's constantly happening. It happened here. Stephanie, mm-hmm. Debbie, you, all. It's all happening. It's always happening. It's trail magic. It's just how we allow it to happen instead of trying to make it happen the way we think it's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, clearing that stuff off of our plate, our mental plate. Allowing trail magic, and it's just so much fun to have trail magic. It's just like, oh my gosh, look what happened. You know, I mean, maybe it wasn't trail magic, but I'll darn it, I'll take it as trail magic.
Right.
I want the magic.
That's what
I
call
like
it.
The magic of life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
How fun.
Well, that's really lovely, and we're so thankful that you were able to stop and talk to
us.
Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank
you,
so Stephanie and Debbie
here.
And Ram Fencing.
And
I'm
like, just so happy to have you here.
I know. I laugh. Oh. And here's trail magic again. It's like, you know, I had in my mind, here I was doing this. I was doing it again. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to be going, they're going to be selling, it's a feed store, and they'll have, you know, they'll have feed racks, and they'll, they'll have, you know, tack and things that they sell, and they'll have some fencing that they sell, and that's what I was going to go to. That's what I thought I was going to hear. And then it's like, oh, that's not what I found. And all of you beautiful women and men,
so,
and it's like, what a wonderful, wonderful experience this has been. I know, this is going to be one of my highlights. I know it already, it is.
Well, you are delightful to be with, and you make it that way. So it's been a pleasure for us
to have you here.
We'll never forget
Leader
it.
Of the pack, right?
Yeah.
Leader of the pack here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast and encourage you to share with all your equestrian family and friends. You can tune into the Late Night Riders podcast show every Friday night. Each episode will be uploaded exclusively on YouTube, where you can subscribe to our channel to stay up to date with our latest shows. Do you have a topic you'd like us to discuss? We want to hear from you. You may email us at podcast@ramfence.com or feel free to leave a comment below. Thank you again for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bernice.
Thank you. Happy trails.
Such a pleasure. Many, many happy trails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.